Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
All right, I saw a stat over the weekend that you need to hear because it's never been said before. It's never been done before. But it feels a little bit hollow considering what we're looking at right now, where the Rockies are down 15-0.
They were rubbing it in now. They went for two. They went for two after they scored that second touchdown.
They went for two.
That was unnecessary. That wasn't even cool, Giants.
Man.
We're going to remember that. We're going to remember that.
Man, who?
15. I got a good idea.
Okay.
Remember what your thought there is. I got a good, because if I got to jump in because I'll forget mine. It might not be a good idea, but I think Major League Baseball ought to have a rule in play where after the sixth inning, you're in a game like this. Now all you're going to do is you're putting in your worst pitchers, you're putting in relievers. I think you can just, you get your white towel and you just throw it in there. Game. You get to do it four times a year, something like that. Game over. Boop. That's it. Thank y'all for coming. Sorry. White towel was thrown in. Fans get screwed a little bit, but you know what? Well, we're done. I mean, the players don't want to be out there anymore. Certainly not the Rockies. Just throw the white towel in, Zach.
You want to know what? I don't know if you were expecting pushback. You're not getting it from me. This is something I tossed at you a year ago. Now, I know you don't remember, but a year ago, it was a game similar to this one, mm-hmm. and I didn't say the sixth, I said the seventh, because I think you owe the fans seven. I don't think you should have to play innings eight and nine. If it's a double-figure game, you should be able to end it.
So
I believe that.
Do you have a limited number? Can you do it as much as you want?
I didn't even think about that, but I like that idea.
But like have three times throughout the course of the year where you can save your relievers. I like your after seven. That's better than after six because you want to give the fans at least, you know, because what if a guy wants to go get a cold one and he's like, wait, I got a couple more innings. Nope, sorry.
Right.
Yeah, I like that. After the seventh, three times a year, you can throw the towel in and game's over. Save your relievers. Let's get ready for tomorrow, or as in today's case, let's get ready for this afternoon.
That's right. That's right. And in a case like this one, it would be more applicable than ever because you got to play again
right.
in 6 hours here.
Yes.
And you see the fan, there's not a lot of people there. I bet you that half of those fans, if they weren't like, because you want to,
Yeah,
I know.
It's about to be, and they went for two on the first one.
And they're sending guys home as they should. Look, keep competing. It's now 16-0. But I bet if you gave truth serum to every member of the crowd, they tell you, let's get the heck out of here. But you pay for a ticket. You want to follow through. You feel like you're like fulfilling the outing, fulfilling what you paid for the ticket
and
not just leaving. But you can't tell me that more than half of that place wants to be there right now. The score is 16-0. It's 95 degrees out, whatever the heck it is. Like you're just sitting there, just sitting in your sweat and watching your team just get seal clubbed.
Yeah. Seal club?
Bob Ryan.
Oh, okay.
May I have the language of fortune, please?
Yeah, help me out. Oh, they just pulled.
Tinoco?
Yeah. He got pulled. He didn't look good. Rocky's got one hit, though, by the way. So not a run. We got one hit.
Oh, my 16, goodness.
0, one hit. One hit. And the Giants have 17 hits, and they're a bad offensive baseball team. They are.
And
the Reds are bad. You know, you talked about that. Talk about the Giants. They're a bad offensive baseball team also. So it's not like you're doing this against the Dodgers or the Yankees or, you know, an offensive baseball team. The Giants stink.
The Giants have the worst batting average in the National League.
Let me tell you this, not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not anymore.
Not after a day like
right.
that.
Yep. I mean, holy cow. And we had the guy that's our best pitcher right now probably. I mean, you could say John Gray is right.
I was just
right.
going to say
yeah,
John
you,
Gray.
You could say John. He is pitching the best right now, John Gray is. But Marquez has been our guy this year, especially when Freeland went down. So, but, I mean, he just – it was just one of those games, I guess.
It's wild. It's wild. All right, here's the stat that I said that you need to hear because it's pretty cool. Despite this glaring score, stat that you need to hear. On Saturday, and I got two of them for you. On Saturday, Trevor Story, this is really cool. Trevor Story hit his 20th home run of the season, becoming the first shortstop in Major League Baseball history to hit 20 or more home runs in each of his first four seasons. Can you believe that? It's never happened in the history of baseball. A shortstop walk into the league and hit 20 or more home runs in each of his first four seasons.
Unbelievable. He's about to get paid.
He is. And you want to know, you were so right. The other day we were having this conversation and I said, you know, Trevor Story is going to get a big boy. You're going to have to pay him $150 million. And you go, it's going to be $200 million or more. And I think you're right. I think you're right. And especially the way he's ascending. I think he's only 26, 27 years old. But here's another one. Here's another one. Here's another stat that is water cooler worthy. On Saturday, that same night that Trevor becomes the first shortstop in MLB history to hit 20 or more home runs in each of his first four seasons, that same night, Nolan Arenado becomes the fastest third baseman in the live ball era to reach 2,000 bases. The fastest third baseman in the live ball era to reach 2,000 total bases. So another really nice feather in his cap as well.
Really nice. Really nice. I mean, obviously, those guys, great players. And it's nice watching them, you know, on the left side of the infield. And usually they're right next to each other in the batting lineup. So, I mean, they're fun to watch.
Well, and here's the thing. Here's the disappointing part of this conversation. What do we have to show for it? It's like the four All-Stars. Like, they're going to lose today, and they're going to once again be a losing team. It'd be an under 500 team. And it just feels so deflating that the expectations surrounding this team, where a guy like Pedro Gomez, who's covered this league for 20 years and is really smart and doesn't have bias toward any team in particular, picked the Colorado Rockies to win the division and go play in the World Series. They've lost more games than they've won.
You still picking them to win 93 games?
Mm-mm.
I'm not going to forget that one.
What's talking about?
You always remind me of when I threw the towel in too early.
Right, that's right. And so I'm not going to let you forget your 93-game win total just over a week ago that you said that they were going to.
July 3rd. They were ahead of the pace when they won 91 and 92 and somehow have now won, you know, two games since then.
Yeah.
I feel like Aqib Talib, Emmanuel Sanders being asked about the Halloween party. What Halloween party? What prediction?
What are you talking about?
I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. Bill Barnwell, another smart guy from ESPN, he evaluated the NFL's best and worst offensive arsenals. And he says the Broncos may have a star on their hands, but he's on layaway. Details next. ESPN's Bill Barnwell, he evaluated the NFL's best and worst offensive arsenals.
We got one.
Tapia.
Oh,
we got one. Solo shot.
Yeah.
Second
half of
the game.
Can't have that shut out. Like, can't get shut out.
You're seeing
you
like,
ain't shutting us out.
Like,
there we go.
Like, yeah, we know we're down 17-0. Yeah, we know that.
Look at the party going on in the stands.
We ain't going nowhere.
16-1. We still got time. It's Coors Field. We still got time. It's bottom of the sixth. We still got time, Zach. Have faith.
Phew. All right. 16-1. Hey, something to build on. Bill Barnwell of ESPN, he put out an article yesterday ranking the NFL's best and worst offensive arsenals. He took a different approach to these rankings, okay? And he tried to look at the team's skill position talent without including the impact of the quarterback, which is really impossible to do, right? And he also took out – so this is interesting. He's evaluating these skill positions but not including the impact of the quarterback, the offensive line, or the scheme.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a raw talent look – At who we got, okay? He ranked the Broncos. I'm not going to ask you where he had them ranked, okay? He had the Broncos ranked out of 32 teams. Where do you think he had it? Well, go ahead.
25.
31.
Oh, wow.
31 out of 32.
I like playing the guessing game. You know that.
Me too. I like playing it too.
Well, you didn't want to play it.
Well, I just asked you a similar question this past week when they're doing the triplets conversation.
Yeah, but that was last week.
That's true. That's true.
The weekend has happened.
Totally
everybody forgot.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we all forget after the weekend.
This is what, with that in mind, the 31 ranking, this was his explanation. This is interesting. Quote, injuries push the Broncos down the pecking order here. As Emmanuel Sanders coming off a torn Achilles, while breakout running back Philip Lindsay is recovering from a serious wrist injury. Both will be back, but Sanders is 32 and is the only veteran of note in Joe Flacco's receiving core. Flacco will need to find a connection with second-year wideouts Cortland Sutton and Deshaun Hamilton. Now, here's the part of the anecdote that I wanted to focus on. Not the anecdote. I was about to call you out on that.
It did not seem right. You just threw it in there.
The excerpt. That's what I wanted to say.
Yeah,
the excerpt.
I knew that wasn't right. But I had nothing concrete to back myself up with to really make a case for.
Not just knowledge of the word.
Right, yes. But I knew it wasn't right. I'm like, that's not an anecdote. I know it's not, but I don't know what the heck anecdote is, but I know it's not. Whatever he's doing right now, it's not an antidote.
It's a quintessential Stokely here.
Tell Stokely what plethora means.
Thank you,
Peyton.
Thank you.
All right, here's the part of the excerpt that I wanted to focus on. This is from Bill Barnwell of ESPN. He says, quote, like Foles, Flacco has a history of going for his tight ends. He has a far more promising option than the Jags is picking in first round Noah Fant. But the track record of first-round tight ends as a rookie might temper enthusiasm. Just 4 rookie tight ends in the entire history of the league. Charlie Young, Keith Jackson, Jeremy Shockey, and Evan Engram have topped 700 receiving yards. Fant's impact is more likely to come in 2020 and beyond, end quote. I didn't realize just 4 tight ends in the history of the sport have walked in. Not 1,000-yard receiver.
What's the most ever? What's the most ever for a rookie tight end in the NFL?
My gut tells me that it's Jeremy Shockey. I don't know that for sure, but I remember when Shockey came on the scene, I'm looking at it right now. He was 894 yards back in 2002.
Okay, that's a really good rookie season.
It's a really good. Keith Jackson walked in the league, and this is 1988. He was 869 yards, so Shockey would still be over that. I know Evan Engram wasn't up there, so now it would just be about Charlie Young. Okay, his rookie year, he was 854. So the most receiving yards ever by a rookie tight end is Jeremy Shockey's 894 yards for the New York Giants in 2002.
Can Noah Fant beat that?
Yes.
Oof. I would not say.
No, can he?
Right. I'd say it's going to be really difficult. But
if he plays all 16.
Yeah, if he plays all 16.
Let's just use 895 yards. That would break it, right? So 895 yards divided by 16 games. Why can't Noah Fant get 56 yards a game?
I mean, he could.
In this offense, with his skill set.
He could. He definitely could. But I just don't see it happening. But if there's somebody that could do it, like that could break this record, he is that type of tight end that could do it, because you come in the league and you're fast, you're a big target, it's an offense that needs you, a quarterback that loves the tight end, a system that's fit perfectly for a tight end to go out there and produce at a high level. So certainly he's got a nice fit to go out there and do it. And it's not one of those things where you got to run all these intricate routes or whatever. Look, his size and speed will be able to get him open.
Sure.
And he'll make a lot of plays on just 50-50 balls because he's 6'5", and he's throwing up there. That's one of the best things that he does, kind of like Cortland Sutton, is go up and get the football. So,
and here's another factor that you didn't just mention. We have no incumbent. We have no, like, no one sitting, like, at this, like, we have no, you know, Todd Heap sitting here, like, okay, well, you're going to kind of work behind him for a couple years.
Or, like, in Minnesota, Kyle Randolph.
Kyle Rudolph.
Kyle Rudolph. Yep. Randolph is older.
Yeah, that's
older. Older stepbrother.
That used to be a star.
Yeah.
Could've
he was really good.
Injuries
he was really in high school. Yeah, that old knee injury in high school got him, but he was going to be a star. Kyle Rudolph, with the tight end that they just drafted out of Alabama.
O.J. Howard? No,
10 years ago O.J. Howard got drafted.
It was 2017, but,
his dad played in the NFL. Irv. Irv Smith. Irv Gotti.
Irv Gotti. Irv Gotti. Murder, Inc. Oh. Yeah.
Well, not him either.
What the heck? Did he play? He played this past year, right?
No, no, he's a rookie. He just got drafted. He's out of Alabama.
Oh, yeah, it's Irv Smith.
That's what I said. I got no validation on that. I said it, and just nobody validated it. So, but he has a proven tight end. They just gave Kyle Rudolph an extension there. Like you said, there's not that guy here. He's not here. So it's wide open. And coming back to that point, when we go out there on Thursday, maybe it's not first day, but man, he better be in there. It's just a given, right? Hey, Jeff Heirman, sorry, but this is Noah Fant's spot.
It's going to be one of my first easy identifiable observations from Kim.
Yeah.
Is he out there starting?
Yeah.
Are we just saying, look, take whatever bubble wrap is on this new product, take it off, throw him out there. Let's figure it out. Let's figure it out together. So, Irv Smith Jr.
Yeah, his dad played in the NFL, too.
Dad was Irv. He said his dad played in the NFL. We didn't know it was Irv.
I did everything for you right there and got no validation on anything.
You're
welcome.
We have not done what we're about to do in quite some time. But we return to that time of day. Stokely stoked up. The first time in a while. We're getting hyped next.
What's Brandon Stokely?
Yeah, I'm so stoked.
Stoked up about today.
Zach, they did it. We didn't think they could actually do it, but guess what? They did. I've seen a lot of impressive things in my day, but this has to be at the top of the list.
What happened?
The Rockies scored a run, and it's just 16-1 now, Zach, and that's what I'm stoked up about.
Brandon Stokely's stoked up.
That's what I'm talking about!
Like Winston Churchill said, never, ever, ever give up. Yes.
We're still here!
Thanks to Tappy. The Rockies had one hit before that Tappy home run. And here's the other kicker. The Giants, and I don't know if it's still true, but it was an inning ago, and I saw this from Taylor McGregor's Twitter account who works for the Rocks. The Giants, who have the worst batting average in the whole National League, were perfect with runners in scoring position.
Wow.
Perfect. That's hard to do.
Yeah.
This is a cherry on top. The Rockies were as much of a favorite coming into today's game from the experts in the desert as they have been in any game in like a month and a half.
Wow.
Yeah.
And they're losing 16-1.
That's right. That's right. But I'll tell you this, and I said this to you during a break, the way that baseball works, watch the Rockies come back and win tonight 5-2. You know, like it just
seems like, you know, when you have a big offensive explosion like that, especially when you play a few hours later, what usually happens? You go in the tank, the other team scores the runs, and it's just flip flop. That's what we hope's the case. Right now, the best you can do is split today's games. Obviously, you're not winning today. This morning, but you can get this afternoon one. The only problem is, you know, we had our guy on the mound.
That's right.
Marquez. Now
that's
we
right.
got
Chichi
Gonzalez.
That's right.
Who had one start, who I thought did a solid job for not having start in like 10 years. He did a decent job in his first outing. So I'm happy to see him get another opportunity, and hopefully he pitches kind of like he did in his first start.
He was pretty solid. It's pretty solid. What did he go, like 5 2/3? It was something like that right in there.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. You better win the night because you're already down. This is a 4-game set, right? This is against, you know, one of the worst offensive teams in
Where's
the entire
Peter?
National.
Where's Peter?
Tomorrow night. And this is just the direction I was going to go.
Oh, sorry.
You better win tonight, because if you don't win tonight, You have to win two in a row to split the series, and that shouldn't be what qualifies for success against a team like the Giants. But if you don't win tonight, you're sending out Peter Lambert tomorrow, who has been shaky as of late after a couple good starts to kick things off as a Rocky. Two quality starts, but after that, it larger sample size just sort of revealed itself. Maybe it's not as ready as we thought. And I just don't feel good about it, flat out.
Right.
Flat out. And then they play in the day again on Wednesday at 1:10.
McMahon.
Did the Rockies just hit?
Yeah.
Brian McMahon
just hit
a home run. And it's 16-2.
We ain't going nowhere. We're back in it.
You better pack the lunch.
We are back in it. It ain't over till it's over.
I'll say this, kidding aside, what a game yesterday for Ryan McMahon. Probably his best offensively as a Rocky. And he needs to keep taking steps forward, of course. But this has been just disappointing across the board with the Rocks. And I know some people say they come out of the woodwork when this kind of stuff happens to the Rockies. Same old Rockies. But
June swoon.
Right.
We're in July.
Well, considering the expectations and the firepower, you had four All-Stars. This is as disappointing, I think, of a stretch as, it's right up there in recent memory, I guess, is what it is.
Yeah. Did a good job of finding a way to win two out of three against the Reds. Now need to find a way to get this afternoon's game for sure. You don't want to lose a series at home against the Giants.
And I'm seeing the ninth strikeout for Jeff Samardzija just a second ago before the McMahon dinger is his highest total in almost 2 years. And we have said this with a handful of pitchers, whether it's Madison Bumgarner, what either matches career high or season high, and then it was who just did it against us? I'm forgetting. Anyway, the offense has shown itself to be boom or bust.
That's a 4-game series. I didn't realize there was a 4-game series.
I just said that.
Yeah, I wasn't paying attention. I was watching Ryan McMahon hit a home run.
Yeah. Anyway, be that as it may, it's not going to go. Samardzija's getting pulled. Is what it is. Game's over. Get one back tonight. Earlier today, you and I had a conversation. Where and when do the Broncos have an advantage at quarterback? And we went through the schedule week by week. This is in our first hour. If you missed the whole conversation, you can go back and access it on our podcast on demand, 1043thefan.com or the app. And we went through week by week, and I just teed you up, said, hey, week one, you're at Oakland. His counterpart is Derek Carr. Who you got? And we went through the schedule, and we identified 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of the 16 games where we believe, or you believe rather, that the Broncos have an advantage at the quarterback position. Joe Flacco against whoever. And those 6 games are week 2 against Chicago at home, week 4 against the Jags at home, week 6, and I should be saying these quarterbacks, week 2 against Mitchell Trubisky at home, week 4 against Nick Foles and the Jags at home, week 6 against the Titans and Marcus Mariota at home, week 12 at Buffalo against Josh Allen, and week 16 and 17 respectively against the Lions, Matt Stafford at home, and against the Raiders at home against Derek Carr. 6 of the 16. And by the time we got done with this, I couldn't really give you any legitimate pushback. I really couldn't. I could try and say, maybe ahead of Derek Carr week 1, but on the road, the Broncos haven't shown the ability to beat the Raiders on the road since what? Was it 2015?
Yeah, I forget the actual year, but it's been a while.
It's been years. We both understand that the quarterback position is the most important in sports. Is this... I go back to what Nick Ferguson said not long after he first got here. I thought it was a good call. I said, you don't need an elite quarterback to win big. You just need the right quarterback. And that's really kind of what we're hoping with Joe Flacco is we all understand Flacco's not going to be a top 5 quarterback this year, but could he be the right fit, that crucial F word, the right fit here? But when we were having the conversation about is there an element of the Broncos that's overrated, I think while this wouldn't be perfectly accurate, I think that you may be able to throw Flacco in that conversation in terms of the assumption that it's an upgrade. A year ago, we thought we had the makings of an upgrade, what Case Keenum was. We thought that Trevor Siemian was an upgrade over Paxton Lynch, and we played him. I just don't want to get caught into this assumption that it's a new quarterback. He's done something really, really big and important in the past. But I'm hedging with Flacco still.
Well, certainly. I mean, look, he got replaced by Lamar Jackson last year. It's not like he's put up a lot of highly productive seasons when you look at his numbers. And he's a little bit older. How much does he have left in the tank? I mean, this could be the downside of his career, or he could be plateauing out, ready to go back up a little bit. So I can't sit here and totally disagree with you, with Joe. New place, new scheme. You got to look at the environment around him also. Rich Scangarello, new offensive coordinator, for his first time doing it. So certainly, Joe, I think when you look at his career, it can go either way really, really easily for him. And it wasn't trending up the last couple years really with him in Baltimore, or certainly they wouldn't have drafted a quarterback in the first round.
Sure.
So we'll see if he can get this thing back heading in the right direction. It's not an easy thing to do. And certainly for Joe to come in here and all of a sudden get this thing going back in the right direction right away.
Do you believe the Broncos have the right pieces to the left and right of Flacco for him to be successful?
You're talking about offensive line? You're talking about the offense?
I'm talking about everything.
You're talking about the whole football team or just offensively?
Offensively.
Yeah. Offensively.
Because so often, by the way, over the last couple of years, like in the defense of guys like Case Keenum or Trevor Siemian, people fairly point to, well, how could you expect these guys to be successful when he's running for his life and in an outdated, antiquated offense with, a lack of skill position and no dynamic running game previously till 2018? Where are the excuses at this time around?
I don't think there is any. I think they have plenty of weapons offensively for Joe to be successful, for Rich Scangarello to be successful, for this offense to be successful. I think they have more than enough talent offensively, especially if Emmanuel Sanders comes back. Now, we could look back on this statement by me in 6, 7, 8 months and say, oh, what were you thinking? Because this offensive line could be a disaster. I mean, I think we agree it should be better, but, when you start looking at it and you're starting a left guard, your starting left guard is a rookie.
Mm-hmm.
Your starter at center, I know he can do both, but he really was a guard
mm-hmm.
that you moved to center out of necessity. And you think they think he's going to be okay there. But, he wasn't the starter last year at center to start the season.
He was not.
He got to get some experience there, but he had his issues last year when he filled in for Matt Paradis. Your right guard is a guy whose career was heading definitely in the wrong direction, and he popped his Achilles last year, and the only reason he's on the football team is because of the injury guarantee in his contract. They couldn't cut him. So those three positions right away are like, whew. And we're all very high on Dalton Risner and think he's going to be a really good player, but he's a rookie.
That's right.
And your left tackle, I mean, I don't need to say anything about him. Everybody knows about Garrett Bowles. So your right tackle, is he overpaid or not? Will he just be a good right tackle? Well, we're paying him like a great right tackle. So you can look back and say this offensive line was just, they were bad. They were not very good. And so if that's the case, then, maybe Joe didn't have enough. And will Emmanuel Sanders stay healthy the whole season? And if that happens with the offensive line, you're not able to run the football as effectively as you did last year, it's going to make it tough for Joe to be successful in the passing game. But I do think the line will be better. And I do think, Mike Munchak will help to a certain degree. I don't think they're going to go from where they are to a top five offensive line, but I think they'll be better. I think the scheme will help. And I think there's weapons around. When you look at Cortland Sutton and Emmanuel Sanders and you look at Noah Fant and Jake Butt, hopefully he can stay healthy. Philip Lindsay and Royce Freeman. I mean, there's weapons to Deshaun Hamilton, Tim Patrick. I mean, I like all those guys. They're really good football players. So the excuses that time, you know, where we were looking back and like, huh, well, what do we expect Trevor Siemian to do?
Yeah.
What do we expect him to do? I mean, look at this offense. Look, there's no weapons around him. I think that's, you know, old news. I think they do have enough talented players for Joe Flacco and this offense to be successful.
Well, you said something interesting there at the outset of your explanation. You said, we both agree, when you're talking about the offensive line, you said, we both agree that they should be better. But, and then you filled in the reasons why it could go wrong. I feel like we can do that with every single phase of this entire offense. Like, in the most literal sense, where Joe Flacco should be an upgrade, but there's a reason why he's here. Philip Lindsay should still be dynamic, but there's injury concern and just act two concern. Noah Fant should be our franchise tight end. He's never played a snap. Emmanuel should be healthy, but he's 32, and we really don't know. You know, Deshaun Hamilton, Timmy Patz, they should be in this maybe blossoming pyramid or period as a young pro, but we still don't know. So let me ask you this in a different way. What are you most sure of offensively? What is something that you can point to where you feel the most confident of a lot of uncertainties?
The most confident.
And it can be a player. It can be a position. It can be anything you want it to be.
I would say this running back group, I feel good about them. Freeman, Royce Freeman, Philip Lindsay, whether it's Booker or a young guy takes his spot, I feel good about that room and what Philip Lindsay brings to the table and what Royce Freeman brings to the table. I think they complement each other really, really well. This system's set up for success there. We've seen it, with TD and Clinton Portis and Mike Anderson and Quentin Griffin and yada. I mean, list goes on and on of successful running backs in this scheme. So but there's questions there, like you said, and Philip Lindsay said today that if you want to,
I'm glad you mentioned that because, and that is my fault. We didn't get to it.
I got your back.
We were looking at, Mike Kliss's Twitter account, and Philip Lindsay is having a, kids football camp. And, Mike talked to him and he said, running back Philip Lindsay said during a break from his pro star football coaches, that coaches and training staff will determine reps he takes come Thursday. Okay, so this is up to the training staff and the coaches how many reps Philip Lindsay takes. But Kliss has Philip Lindsay quoted here, quote, in my mind, I'm ready, I'm 100%. So take that for what it is. He's telling you he's good to go.
Yeah.
And physically he looks, and Steven, I saw you responded to a picture over the weekend. There was just a Broncos fan who I think was at an ice cream shop, and Philip Lindsay was there, and Lindsay ended up sitting down next to the kid on a bench. This is just so great. It's just who this guy is. And he just sat and talked to the kid, and the kid was like maybe 11 years old or something like that, young kid. And Philip Lindsay just sat there and talked to him. But the picture that's out there is Philip Lindsay looking like he has gained 25 pounds of muscle. I mean, he looks, and I have the picture right here. I'm going to show it to you. I mean, look at that dude. Looks like he's put on some weight. He's got guns hanging from those sleeves.
Yeah, looking good. That's good news. That's good news. I think they should have a plan for him, like Emmanuel Sanders, when you talk about reps and how much he goes in practice and all of those things. Look, he hurt his wrist. He didn't hurt anything lower body-wise. But I still think that you got to look at the big picture here and the wear and tear, and you want him healthy during the season. So I think he does need to get work in this offense and this style of an offense because he didn't do a lot, hardly at all in the offseason. So, you know, there's a technique to it. It's a different scheme. And so for him, he definitely needs those reps, but you still have to have a plan in place as far as how many reps you're going to give him. And you got to monitor it.
If you remember OTAs, they weren't even letting him take handoffs.
Yeah.
So, there's going to be an adjustment period there too. Wade on the RamosLaw.com text line, 303-713-1043, said, Stoke, if any of the starting players get hurt, there's not enough talent to cover at that level. Depth is a concern across the board. But isn't this guy, and I heard the guys this morning talking about, hey, if someone goes down the offensive line, you're kind of screwed. Isn't just the way it is? Isn't this the
that's
league?
That's everywhere. Yeah, that's everywhere. Everybody, same thing. Man, who, you know, if we lose this guy, if you, especially offensive line. Let's just start with the offensive line. It's hard to find quality starters across the league. Everybody's looking for these guys. So you don't have quality depth anywhere in the league. There's not a team that says, oh, man, I feel good about my backup guards.
Right.
Feel great about my backup tackle. No. So if those guys go down, you're in trouble. And you got to try to piecemeal something together. And, I just got another one. Kicked a field goal.
That's only 17 on the board.
But that's everywhere. You know, just backups. I mean, they're backups for a reason, usually. And you have a hard time offensively when you look at the line to find quality starters. And you're talking about, you know, backups. So that's not just here in Denver. That's everywhere. And certainly, I think running back is a position where you can have quality guys, you know, from the bottom to the top, your starter to your third or fourth guy. Those guys, I mean, there's a lot of quality running backs, and you see it all the time. Starter gets hurt, backup gets hurt. Next thing you know, the third string's in there, and it's like, ooh, who's this guy? He's killing
it. Right.
But everywhere else, I mean, that's usually not the case. If your starters go down, usually you're in trouble. I mean, talking about defensive linemen, that's tough to find those guys. Pass rushers, cornerbacks. Well, linebackers.
I'll say this. In years past, or at least the last couple years, it was never really a concern, but it did feel like we had a smidgen of depth at outside linebacker.
Oh, yeah, we did.
You had faith in Shane Ray. You had faith in Shaq Barrett, you know, if they needed to come in there for a pinch.
Did have good depth there.
And that just doesn't feel like that anymore. It's unproven,
you're hoping,
guys.
Jeff Holland. Right. I forgot the other guy that they picked up this year. You hope they can provide that type of depth for you, but certainly not like what we had with Shaq Barrett and Shane Ray, where you had quality guys that could be starters on other teams as your backup. So yeah, you're right. We had that there, but that's very, very fortunate to have that type of depth at the pass rushing position.
I can't wait, man. We are right around the corner from training camp 2019, Road to Redemption. It's so appropriately named. It's an opportunity for the Broncos to get back on track.
I thought long and hard about what I wanted to name training camp this year, and
very creative.
Went back and forth with a few different things.
What were the other options?
I got them written down in my book. I don't like to share all that because I might break it out for next year.
Oh, okay? Got it.
Yep. So I might save that for next year. So I don't want to give anything away.
Here's the question I'll ask on the way out here. You know, we went through and went through the whole schedule. We said, you know, where and when do the Broncos have an advantage at quarterback? And we talked about the counterpart to Flacco, and you went through the schedule and you picked six games where you believed the Broncos had an advantage at quarterback. Five of the six games are home games. The one road game you have is against a young Josh Allen. But here's what we got to be hopeful for, that in the first four games of the year, the first quarter of the season, that Joe Flacco looks the way he did in the first quarter of the season last year. He looked terrific. And we can get to a point where we have Cleveland coming in and you can, with conviction, say, I like our matchup this week against Baker Mayfield. I like our matchup going on the road against Kirk Cousins. Whereas in right now, we can't reasonably say that with conviction.
But, that's right. But, you know, as the season wears on, things change. So right now, as we sit, hopefully it's different in a better way for us once we get to, you know, week 9, week 10, and we see this thing through, and hopefully this offense is getting better, Flacco's getting better, and we feel maybe a little bit different about our situation.
We got the war room tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. War room time.
We got the war room. Mark Schlereth is going to be there. Nick Ferguson is going to be there. And I believe James Merrillat is going to be there. It's going to be a blast. And you know that we're going to be there. Cannot wait for that. It's going to be riveting conversation, I assure you. All right. Fun show. Appreciate you hanging with us. Shout out Steven on the ones and twos. We got the drive coming up next.